Between juggling client meetings, managing your website, and keeping up with everyday tasks, who has time to stress about website security? With Kinsta, they take care of the technical stuff so you can focus on what you do best. Kinsta provides managed hosting for WordPress, offering lightning-fast load times, top-tier security, and unmatched human-only customer support. Whether you're a business owner, web developer, running a digital agency, Kinsta gives you complete peace of mind by keeping your site online secure and performing at its best. They even have a user-friendly dashboard called My Kinsta that simplifies the site management with tools for cache control, debugging, redirects, and CDN setup. And thanks to their unlimited free expert-led migrations, you won't experience any downtime when switching to Kinsta. Plus, their 24/7, 365 human-only support is available in multiple languages to help with any inquiries, no matter how complex. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their website. Visit kinsta.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today. It's been a massive year in crypto. Big price movements, headlines everywhere, with major institutions and even countries getting involved. If you've been curious but feel like you've missed the boat, don't worry. There's still time. With only 21 million Bitcoin ever to exist, it's designed to be scarce, and that scarcity can mean real staying power. My friends at CoinFlip Preferred believe stepping into crypto should be simple, secure, and on your terms. That's why they pair you with a dedicated crypto expert who guides you through every step from your very first transaction to more advanced solutions. Plus, CoinFlip is a registered money services business and does not custody funds, so you stay in control and protected. With nearly a decade of collective experience, CoinFlip Preferred's client managers know this space inside and out. Ready to explore the world of digital assets with confidence? Visit coinflip.tech/founders or use promo code founders for 50% off transaction fees, valid for one customer until May 30th, 2025.
Welcome to Inspired by Her, the podcast that will give you the inspiration, motivation, and tips for success from some of the top executives, CEOs, and influencers from around the globe. With your host, serial entrepreneur, and named one of the most influential Filipina in the world, Kate Hancock.
We are live. Hi, everyone. This is Kate, and welcome to the show, Inspired by Her podcast. And this show is brought to you by Kale Agency. If you need personal branding, SEO, or marketing, go to kaleagency.com. Today, I'm very excited, my very first Filipina guest ever. Mary Ann Pastrana is a co-founder. She's a serial entrepreneur, you're doing everything, right? I don't know how you do it. She's the co-founder of Fast Cat, which, oh, by the way, when I was in college, I would, you know, use Fast Cat from Cagayan de Oro to Cebu or, Cebu to come again. So I was, when I first met you in Macau, I was so excited to know that you co-founded FastCat. So Mary Ann, for anyone who did not know you, can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. I'm Mary Ann Pastrana. I'm a wife, a mother, soon to be a grandmother, a serial entrepreneur who's passionate about business, women empowerment, safety, and family.
Wow. Wow. I can't wait to really dig down into your story. You're in hospitality. You're married to Fast Cat. So it's like, it's a fast jet, right? Is that what it is? And you're doing in real estate investment and cleaning and educate. What else you don't do?
I think we just had to build this ecosystem. Mm-hmm. It started with a trading company that my husband founded. Mm-hmm. And we started with that. But I was working for my parents mm-hmm. at the time. Was in the stevedoring, arastre, customs brokerage business. I was my mom's assistant. Mm-hmm. And Chet and I got married in 1988. He founded a trading company that supplies bulk materials to cement plants. Mm-hmm. And soon after, somebody offered him this ro-ro vessels that connects the Philippine Islands. And he said, yes, you know, I would always joke about my husband finishing agribusiness in the University of the Philippines at Los Manos. Agribusiness, so that's agricultural business.
Okay.
But the entrepreneur in him is that he agrees on any business that is offered to him. And so when this shipping business, of which we don't know anything about, was offered to him, he agreed and he said yes. And that's what got us into shipping, you know. So we started in a trading business, and then he bought this shipping company that connects the Philippine Islands by ro-ro vessels. It's called ro-ro because we carry people and we carry cargo. So it's roll on, roll off.
Oh, and that's what it means.
That's what it means. So in this kind of shipping setup, we're supposed to carry cargo with the vehicle. So whether it's a bus, it's a cargo truck, it's your car, you can roll it in and roll it off on the ship. And so that's how we started doing that. And in setting up the rural business, there's an ecosystem that is involved. So we have the hardware of the ships that connects the islands. And somehow you need people to clean it, right?
Yeah.
And I need I felt that I needed to set up a company that will meet my requirements, that will meet my quality requirements, that can really custom fit the service to our needs. And so I set up a cleaning company. And soon enough, when we were connecting the islands already, people would say, hey, you want to be able to ride your ships? And are there good restaurants there? Are there hotels where we can stay in? Is it good? And so that started our hospitality business. And it was good that my second daughter took up international hospitality management in the Philippines. And, you know, she's lucky that she's able to train abroad too. And when she came back, when she's done with her college education, she's now helping us in this hospitality business. So she kind of gives us a confidence in setting it up because we have our second daughter helping us in this. And in the ports business, it's also because our ships need to dock in ports, and therefore we need to have to run the ports, you know, the professional as possible, also to cater to not only our needs but needs of the other ship owners. And we have our eldest daughter, who's she's a dermatologist by profession, but she's already helping us also in that business. So she's helping us run the ports business as well.
Work together. Yeah, it's amazing. So there is a term for that. I think that's called dogtailing. So you have one business and then you open up this business, you have the training and the hospitality.
Yes.
It just like you said, yes. It's part of your system. So that's amazing. Before we could really go through that, where did you grow up, Marianne?
Well, I grew up in Manila. San Juan, it's called. It's a town in the metropolitan, near everything, and quite safe. Our past president, President Estrada, used to be the mayor of San Juan, where I grew up. And my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, was also the mayor of that town for I think 20 years mm-hmm. before ERA. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So your grandfather is in politics.
Yeah. Hey, Kate. Yeah. Hey, can I disturb this with a quick hi from my husband?
Yes, absolutely. Husband? Yes.
I have to say goodbye.
Hi, Chet. Yeah, I love it. Hey, hi, Chet. Good seeing you.
Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Hello. I need to see you soon in the Philippines. You're live.
Yes. Yes.
You should come over and visit, explore the islands after all these things about when everything becomes normal and we can have a good time together. And
yes.
Social distancing.
Yeah, there is.
I will visit you.
You know, she also resorted in Cambiquini.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
she nice. Said her resort.
Where?
Okay, it's in Mumbahao.
Mumbahao. Mumbahao.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You know, Jet's friends with the governor of
JJ.
Governor. He might be watching right now. I think he's. Cool.
We're hoping that we can connect that island soon also to the all and.
We did. GCO. Yeah. Hagda Kambigin Opon.
Yeah, we need that. Yes.
I can't anyway, wait. I have to go to work. She has to talk to you.
Yes.
Bye.
It's seeing it. Oh, that's so sweet.
So this, when my interview? How come she's getting the interview?
It's inspired by. Kate has to do it. It's inspired by him.
Yes. Yeah, I have to do it. I have to do it for him. Yeah, so. That, he's so sweet. You guys are so awesome. And you guys have been married for 31 years.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Congratulations. So,
Mickey's side comment. So, because we were 3 years boyfriend, girlfriends before we got married. So, saying 35 years in total.
Yeah. So, both of you running these companies, who's the boss? Is that you or him or how you guys work together?
Well, in the position, he's the president and CEO, while I'm the executive vice president and treasurer. And somehow we managed to delegate it in a very civil and respectful way, such that we're able to stand each other for the past 35 years.
That's amazing. Seems like you guys work together. And what's your secret for that? How do you handle that? I work with my husband, Dan, at the same time. So I'd like to hear, because a lot of couples ask this question, how do you guys handle it without arguing and running companies together? So what's your secret sauce?
Wow. Okay. For us, I think early on, we agreed that we should have that. We should always respect each other. When we're in the office, we engage. We know up to a certain point how to approach each other. Like if one's heated up already, somebody backs up. So in the homily of the priest the other day, I was on online mass. He's saying, family is, how do you say that? Punuan. How do you translate that in English? Like you cover up for others' weaknesses.
Oh, it's like a balancing. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So nobody's perfect. It will never be perfect, but you have to know how to, put that sauce to make it work well. You know, like how do you fuel it? How do you back up? Back out when it's heated up and all. So for us, our ground rules would be knowing our boundaries, knowing our rules. So when things are heated up, we know that we don't curse each other. We still have that level of respect. We don't escape or leave the house. Mm-hmm. We know we're just home. Of course, a lot of it is rooted in faith and prayer. Chet and I attended a lot of learning courses on marriage. So name it, you know, we attended it, Couples for Christ, Christian Life Program, Marriage Enrichment Weekend, all these recollections over the years on how we can improve our relationship. I read so many books, Gary Chapman, Five Languages of Love. So we've learned all those basic things on how to communicate well, on how we should, handle each other's weaknesses, be each other's strength, be an inspiration, never put down another. I always remember a book I read about love tanks, filling up the love tanks.
I can't have heard of that.
Yeah, so I remember reading early on in our marriage a book called Building a Great Marriage by Ann Ortland. And I took it to heart, you know, like things like affirming your husband, giving them service, respect, of course, prayer, rooted in prayer. So we had a lot of that. It's not easy. It was not easy. It's not a piece of cake. Like, you don't do nothing. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hard work, but the, you know, what you get is so much more out of what you. So yeah. So that's why
you guys are so involved in that. Now, have it ever come up where you wanted to make a decision and he's not agreeing with you? How did you handle that? If it's a business decision.
We have a lot of that. Him getting into the shipping business is something that I really resisted, and I even had a time of rebellion, mm-hmm. because I bought into the business without asking me. And then so I dive in, and then I realize it's so manly. It's so difficult, like far out, way out of my league difficult. And so I remember struggling with it, and I even went to my parish priest here, and I said, "Father, it's too much for me. I can't handle it. What do I do? Do I tell him?" And you know, my parish priest just said, "Yeah, you just tell him you can't handle it anymore. You're stressed, you know." And so that's what I did. I went to him and said, "I'm so stressed. I don't want to handle this anymore." And you know what he said to me? He said, "Okay." That's it.
So did you stop the shipping business?
I stopped being so involved. I'm not the day-to-day stuff. I would go to work every day. I'd have excuses. I enrolled in painting classes. I have priest friends would say, "Let's go to a pilgrimage." And I go, "Yeah, let's go." So I probably went to 3 European trips. You know, you just let me do what I want to do, because I was saying I was so stressed. And so what I realized at that point was that there's somebody who could really take care of the business, mm-hmm. our business, the way I can take care of it. So when I'm done with the dramas, I just came back. And then that's when I realized that, you know, we have roles. You know, the way I talk to God, the way I pray to him, when I was having so much difficulty, I was saying, "God, you said, wives, be submissive to your husbands, okay? So I'm going to follow you, but you take care of me, okay? You take care of me," because I was doing a lot of things that was beyond my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I wanted to fight it. I was resisting it, but I just followed, you know. I followed the Bible. I followed what God said. I prayed a lot. I did the ground rules. I followed Chet. I, you know, supported him. And I think it worked out. It worked out.
Wonderful.
And ultimately, he appreciated that. And he saw that it was helpful. So I think that was the good way to resist it and conquer the battle.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. Now, Mary Ann, what is the best memory of your childhood, and what's the worst? I know your grandfather is a mayor in the city, so you must be growing up doing a lot of things in the household, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, my dad was the eldest of his brood, and when my grandfather was mayor, and my dad would say he was pretty strict, and wanted my dad to be doctor. And he didn't want to. So anyway, my point is, my dad's kind of a tough guy. He looked good. So he was a chick boy.
He's a chick boy.
He's a chick boy. And he's, you know, he would say, he named himself James Bond. So he had a lot of girlfriends. That was tough for a child to see, you know, when you have a dad who's womanizing, and we had domestic violence, you know, seeing my mom being beaten up by my dad. So that was the tough part of my childhood. You know, it brings a lot of insecurities because you see your parents fighting, and you ask yourself, do I still have a family tomorrow? Are they going to make it? So that's the tough one that stands out in my childhood. But the good memory, there are also good memories, I would say. Good memories would be travel. I remember traveling a lot when we were young. Like, my parents are also up into travel. So we do a lot of domestic and international travel when I was young. And I think that those are really good memories. We spent a lot of time in Baguio because, you know, that's our summer capital. So we would have block days. That would be Holy Week and after Christmas when we would spend time in Baguio. Go home to my mom's hometown in Zambales and stay by the beach. Yeah, so we would spend.
I've never been there. I can't wait to visit.
Oh, yeah. It's nice. It's beyond Subic, maybe another two-hour drive from Subic. So that's in the north. So that was fun. Yeah, traveling. And so that's why when I decided that when I have my own family, when I have my kids of my own, I will definitely take them traveling. And good thing Chad and I agreed on that. And so, yeah, we did that.
That's wonderful. Well, when you travel a lot, you learn a lot from navigating and, you know, adjusting different culture and being uncomfortable in a place where you don't know where to go. I think that's especially for kids, I think it really helps them mold to be like worldly. I think
that's true. Yeah. Well, and street smart, I guess. You know, they learn how to be street smart. You learn a lot, like the culture of people and the food. We'd always go to groceries when we travel, you know. You learn a lot when you go to the grocery, you know, what they cook, what they eat, what's available there. And for us Filipinos, I have a lot of tips for travelers, but I guess it's not a good time to discuss that now.
Okay, so Mary Ann, tell me about your very first entrepreneurial journey. Did you start selling when you was a kid? Where do you have all this ideas of running a business? Did you start very early?
Yeah, as mentioned, my parents are from a political family, but they're also entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So my dad had this belief that we should be brought up the way Chinese people did would do to their families, to their kids. And that is exposing them to the business at a very young age. So I remember being a small child and being brought to the office on summer times. And, you know, they would just give us menial jobs like writing down check numbers in the vouchers and just being there, pretty much going to work with them, going home with them. And what I realized is that when I was in the office, it's like our playground. You get exposed to all the situations, whether it's sticky or not. And we saw that the problems pop up and we saw how they solved it or how they dealt with it. And I guess we learned from that as a very young kid. So I remember at the age of 16, I went to the University of the Philippines at Los Baños. That was my second choice of a campus. And the reason why I chose that is because our family owns a hot spring resort 15 minutes away from UP Los Baños, which is in Pansol. It's a known town for hot spring because Mount Makiling is there. And so there's a lot of hot spring resorts at the foot of the mountain. So my grandmother and my aunt lived there. And my aunt decided to migrate to the States when I was 17. And I was in UP staying in a dorm. And she just approached me and said, hey, can you take over the business? Because I'm migrating with my family. And I go, what? Can I do that? And it all it took is that my mom called me from Manila and said, hey, you can do this. I will help you. I will have my brother run the operations, you handle the money and the overall management, and you work on weekends, you work after school, you know, make sure all the income goes into a bank, and you write down all your releases. Good thing I had accounting subject at that time. And pretty much that's it. She goes, that's it. That's all the handover. I had 2-hour session with my mom, and my aunt left for the States. And I was running the business at the age of 17.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And yeah. Wow. And I tell my kids that, you know, now I was just telling my two sons 2 days ago when my parents handed on the business, my aunt and my mom handed the business. I think give them a hard time. It's like, can I do this? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, being exposed at a young age, with my parents running the business, really helped a lot. Like, it gave us confidence to take on what's given to us. And my mom would put in, you know, a few ideas. Like, she goes, you know, if you rent out, lifesavers or swimsuits, that's added income. And then I listen to what people say, like, oh, we don't have enough rooms. And so I put in a project, we should put rooms. I finished nutrition in the University of the Philippines. And so that helped that I was able to set up the restaurant business and the catering. You know. So that was nice. Wow. That was 17 when I ran the for 7 years. Yeah.
Wow. That is really, I can super relate to that. I was, I can see the day to day of a family business, and you know, when you're in a family business, you have no choice but to work, right? Because they're very strict. And now I can see the value of how important it is to have your kids be involved with it. And sometimes I would have my kids listen to the meeting. Okay, so this is the problem and this is why I'm doing XYZ. And now my 13-year-old, he's like, oh, then he understands and he's talking about business. I think he will be an entrepreneur because he'll listen to me every conference call and I would explain to them. But I think it's, you know, the value of what you're getting when you expose your kids to the day to day, it really molds them to be an entrepreneur.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So does any of your kids will be, you mentioned like two are already involved in the business?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. They are. So the model that we're following, Chet and I, is that we involve them in the business, but we are allowing them to pursue what they like to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like Patricia, she's a dermatologist. She's also finding time to set up her own clinic with fellow doctors, but she works with us part time. Well, she's expecting now. No, she's in her fifth month of pregnancy.
Oh wow! Okay. You're gonna be a grandma?
Please. I am.
Oh, you look like it. Well, I'm so excited. You have to send me photos.
I know. Next phase of life. Oh my god! Yeah, I'm excited. And with Alexa, she's a chef, so she. So funny. I have this funny story because she trained in John George. Mm-hmm. Restaurant in New York.
Yeah.
And she lived there for a year. And so she was enjoying herself living alone in New York. And, you know, I probably visited her four times. Every 3 months I would go. But in between, the sister went, the brothers went, Chet went. But anyway, my point is she was having such a grand time in New York in the Mark Hotel, John George at the Mark. 2 years when she was ending her internship, called her dad and say, hey dad, can you give me another 2 years to stay in New York? And I had to say, hey, you know what? You're enjoying yourself because your dad and I pay for the apartment. But if you start paying for your apartment and all your, I think it's not going to be so fun anymore. So Chet said, come back and help us here. So the first thing that Chet asked is, why don't you set up the supply of meals inside the cat vessels, you know, the rice meals that to buy. And you know how very price sensitive our market is. So in the mark, she would tell us, oh, the bill of the table that I cook for is like $200,000. You know, things like that. And they go, what? What do they eat with $200,000? Things like that. Yeah. And then she comes home and she has to plan for a rice meal for like less than a dollar per meal. So you can imagine. So my friend would say, oh, it's not the mark anymore. It's marked down now.
That's a joke.
That's a joke. But the thing is, Chet would, you know, of course she was hesitant at first because that was not the training that she went through in the States in Barcelona. That was at the training. She worked at Hotel Arts Barcelona. So it's
I stayed there. I stayed at Hotel Arts. Yeah, it's a beautiful one.
Yeah, like it.
Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah.
Very nice. So So she worked there for 6 months. And you can imagine her adjustment for preparing these meals to now a less than a dollar meal to be sold in the boat. But you know how Chet framed it. He said, look, if we carry millions of passengers, you just make 1 peso out of every meal. That's still a million pesos. Yeah. So everybody starts there. We just have to start there. So from working in that rice meal, she has grown her brand. She's now a budding entrepreneur, which I'm so proud of. So she created her own brand called Pina. So she's helping small farmers in the islands and then providing the packaging and the branding and the value added service in the product so that she will be able to scale it someday.
Wow.
Right now we're just selling it inside of boats, but the whole big, hairy, audacious goal is to be able to make it available on the shelves and probably export, helping the farmers. That's one that she's doing. And then she co-partnered with girlfriends, four of them. Some trade abroad also on a brand called Good. So it's all this healthy food stuff that's available in a ready-to-eat format. And using all this healthy gluten-free. I guess there's a niche for this. They just started. It's like a year old and they're present in some gyms and outlets. It's still not there, but it's a good start.
Wow.
I think a niche is finding it. So she's a budding entrepreneur. And in this COVID time, friends who have farms are offering her to resell the fresh produce here in our village, where we live. And the last week she sold about 220 kilos of freshly caught shrimp.
Wow. Yes. The demand of like the healthy eating and delivery is up right now, right?
Yes, I think that's her vision, which also got us into a farm. You know, she'd always talk about mom, farm to table food and all, which made me buy a farm. Remember those I was discussing with you when you were in Macau? I was saying, I ventured into a farm and I was looking at you. Yeah, so it's going to have a few rooms for overnighters. It's going to be a farm school. Farm to table, there's going to be a farm to table restaurant. So yeah, we're doing that all because of her. It's her hope to go into farming and really promote healthy eating, farm to table, organic, et cetera.
Wow. I love how you guys have your own business and your kids are involved into doing whatever their passion is. I love it. So you're building a bigger empire of what you have now. I love that.
Thank you.
Well, Mary, being a female, you're running all these different businesses. Tell me about a mistake that you made.
Well, hindsight, I am 52 right now, Kate, and we started very young. I was a mother at 20, working since 17. Hindsight, a mistake I did would be spending a lot of time on the drama. I would say, I should have cut the drama. Hindsight, I was thinking if I was not so emotional on many failures, if I took it on and cut the drama, I could have gone further. Just my point, no? Not that, we're not happy where we are, but I could have done more if I cut all those drama and mistake. And then one thing is, I think I had those dramas when I was also pregnant. So, and now that, you know, when we had issues with the kids growing up, and I had to fill up forms, doctor's forms, they were asking, how was your pregnancy? And you know, that was one reflection that I had. Like, had I known that my baby would be affected by all my drama, I should have deliberately, you know, stopped it and not do that. So I was telling Patricia that. Patricia's my eldest, who's pregnant now. you know, just think happy thoughts. Be, you know, so that was when I was younger. So over time, reading, I learned that, you know, how classical music helps. And you know what? With my youngest son, I would make him listen to classical music like an hour a day. And you know, he plays very good piano. Yeah, he plays really well. You know, over dinner now at this time, we would have dinner together. After dinner, he would play the piano, and I would say, "Wow, he's good. He's good." And yeah, pregnancy. So okay, that was my mistake. Had I known, I should have just got the drama and just be productive and just chose to be happy at that point. Another would be Chet and I were discussing at one time how we are serial entrepreneurs, and we would just, you know, if an opportunity comes, just grab it because, you know, you think it's good and all. But Chet and I said, oh, we should have put more thought in it, and, you know, if it's not a business that we really want to do, you know, if we don't want to scale it and, you know, be number one and be good at it, we might as well not enter it, you know, for what? We're just adding small business. And we lost a lot of money doing that because we thought that we can run it well with somebody else doing it and that's their expertise. So hindsight, we were saying we should just put the money in real estate, you know, because then, invested it in real estate and then let the price go up and all. So we did some of that, but not all. So if you can say that is a regret and a mistake, yeah, that's a mistake, but it's okay.
I think, yeah, I think I could totally relate to that. It could be too, in our Filipino culture, we can't say no to a lot of opportunity. And I've seen my mother doing the same thing, and she's doing three different things. And I was like, why are you doing two different things? You're spreading yourself so thin and you're not perfect into one thing and you're all over the place, right?
Yeah, I had that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's in us that we can't say no to an opportunity. And I have that disease in the beginning, but now like I really have to be very smart with my decision because, the time and, you know, the energy of building a startup is so much, like I would rather work smartly.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. 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 So if there are young people listening to us, I hope they learn from it, you know?
Yeah. Maybe focus one or two that you're so good at instead of doing 10.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And something that they're really passionate about, something that they're really good at, something that they see themselves doing for the long term. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a husband who's an idea man. So he has to tell me all this idea and I'm very focused, driven, like, okay, that's not, you know, I would shut him down all the time because for me it doesn't make sense. So, but you know, if I'm probably an idea person, then I'm doing everything and none of them will succeed. Right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Marianne, can you name a person who has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
Well, definitely it would be my mom. Mom, she's my model. You know, she underwent a lot, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. Our home was not entirely a model home, you can say. Not perfect, but my mom's so formidable. You know, she endured all this. She's very focused on keeping our family together, making something out of her life, learning from the mistakes of the past. So she endured all that. If I think about what she went through, I'm just amazed, you know, jaw drop and say, wow, she's really strong. You know, she's really strong in and out. She made good decisions. She had, very strong character, that got her to where she is, right now. So wow. She's 82, but you know what? She still works in two offices.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she works in the office that my dad and she set up, which is now being run by my brother. So she goes there in the morning And then in the afternoon, she goes to the office that is being run by my younger sister, which she also set up, and I help her set up. It's now run by my sister. She goes in the afternoon, so she's pretty much on top of everything. She signs checks every day. She has her apartment rentals that she handles on her own. Like she would contact the construction workers to do the repairs. She would deal with the hardware and, you know, collect rent.
Wow. She's 80 years old.
So, 82.
82. 82.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And she has a lot of advocacies too, right? So it's not like she's all work. She also takes care of a women's center wherein they provide free dental treatment, free medical treatment to a barangay in San Juan where we used to have our home when we were small. And she maintains that, you know, she'd have meetings every month and, you know, she takes care of this group of women. They're called, Barangay Once Women's Club.
Wow. So she's the leader. Yes. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Do you consider your mom as a tiger mom? Or no? Was she very strict or lenient? Or just okay?
No. She's not a tiger mom because she was working all her life. You know, she was working so hard for the business and dealing with a difficult husband. And five kids. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. So she's not a tiger mom. I tell my kids that, you know, when we were growing up and we needed dental treatment, she'd just go with us one time, introduce us to the dentist. This is the dentist. So when we were small, she would take us. But when we were teenagers, go take care of it. Make your appointment. You have a driver to take you. Do it. I remember studying in UP Los Baños, which is like an hour drive without the traffic at that time, 1 hour from Laguna to go to Green Hills, mm-hmm. where my dentist is. I go on my own. Just tell the driver, can you pick me up? I go. I would have root canal treatments, which means going every other day. And I take care of myself. And you know what? I did that with my kids. Now they're pretty much the same.
Same.
They go to the doctor on their own. I would do it when I would go with them when they were younger, when they were, you know, preteen. But once they became teenagers, now they do it.
Okay, so your mom thought you to be self-sufficient and you hand it down to your kids.
Yeah,
that's very important. And yeah, I do the same thing with my boys. So now they learn how to cook salmon and egg. When they're hungry, then fix yourself. You have fingers and 2 feet. You can figure it out.
True. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Those are skills that they have to learn. Also, that was why also I was having that conversation with my boys here. Because the two boys, one is studying in New York. He's in sophomore. In SUNY Maritime College, mm-hmm. and the youngest one, he's about to enter college, and he already got accepted in SUNY Maritime also for naval architecture. And so they're finishing their schooling now online. So Matthew, Chet had him fly over from New York as soon as we learned of the lockdown, and CJ is also in lockdown, finishing senior year. And so I was telling them, hey guys, as soon as school is over, you gotta be working in the office. And another day, you have to learn how to cook. Cook. I was telling them, you have to learn how to cook, sinigang and adobo because that also give you points when you court someone. When you're finding a girlfriend, it's impressive too if you know how to cook Filipino food. So,
oh my God, that's very true. Well, I tried to do that with my kids. When I was building my company, I had their grandma were taking care of them, so all their food, they're never super exposed to Filipino food. So I tried to force them some Filipino food, and they look at me like I'm going to poison them. It looks like. But now they like the adobo and some other food. I slowly introduce it to them. But yeah, so it's, you know, I tried to force them. Well, one liked the he likes the maggi and noodles because now we're in quarantine. So now, oh my God, I love it. It's like, yeah, that's what we did every day. I put some egg and cabbage on it.
Yeah.
Well, Mary Ann, with this current situation, what scares you the most?
What scares me the most is letting people down, you know. With this COVID situation that we have right now, we have like 800 people working for us and working with us, I mean. And it's scary if we don't keep up with sustaining them. So right now our concern is how to be able to sustain their salaries because they depend on it and their families depend on it. How do we keep afloat? That's for our business. But generally what scares me now is for the Philippines, you know, there's so many people who are hungry. There might be a revolution of some sort if government doesn't handle this well because people are going hungry. You know, I live in Alabang and we're near the state penitentiary where, you know, Munti. Have you heard, Kate, Munti? Lupa, you say Munting Lupa, Munti.
Yes.
Yeah. We're in Alabang, Munti Lupa. And, you know, if there's some sort of a revolution, you know, people, we can have that breakout. What's that? Like that show. So that's scary. That's such a scary thought. So I hope that this ends soon and that we'll be able to go back to normal. Mm-hmm. I was talking to my HR director just before talking to you, and we see right now some of our people getting depressed. You know, a lot of them have anxiety and you know, this uncertainty. And so I was telling her that, you know what, after, you know, when we go back to office, we should have a way of processing this, you know, hearing them out, you know, having sessions maybe on a limited number in the room wherein we can process this so that we can also aid in the mental health of our people. Because, yeah, it can just be so daunting and, you know, scary. And, well, mental issues are prevalent at this time. So, yeah, that scares me.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I think there are 40 of them, but, like, it's very hard when they just rely on their job for a day-to-day food. Yes. And when they don't have that, I mean, I could see how people would – you know, that's very difficult, like mentally, and how are you going to feed your family? So that's very hard. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard.
Because majority of people just rely and they don't have savings for emergency funds. So they're just relying in the government help, and that doesn't come in all the time. And I mean, we don't expect the government to do it every day as well, right? But like the reality of it is really hard because they can't go out.
That's true. Yeah. And you know, the serial entrepreneur in me and, you know, root cause analysis. When I think about these things, I go, so how do we solve this? With our people, I would say, oh, then we should put in more training in financial management or, you know, all the basic stuff. We should be able to educate people to get out of this, to prepare for disasters like this. You know, there's just too much, too many things to do and to inspire people to do. You know, the root cause, you know, we were discussing this over at dinner with my kids and I was saying, I can't believe that there are people like that, you know, you like really have nothing, right? That like, how do we help them to get out of that? How do we break that cycle of poverty?
Yeah.
It's thing that we should really think about. And, you know, over the long term, get these young people to help solve, mm-hmm. you know, more the kids who have access to education and leadership positions, you know. Well, anyway, at least on my kids, that's what I tell them. I said, you know, God gave us this life. What we do with our lives is what we give God. So with all the blessings that's been given us, you know, we have roof over our head, we have food on our tables, we have access to education. What do we do? What can we do to help solve the world's problems? How can we be a help to others? So anyway, that's just a question in my head, something to do. Conversation, we should keep going.
Yeah, it's that's very hard and it's very tough. And even the property that I have incoming in, we have a lot of ferns. So I would tell myself, why don't you just harvest it and give it to the neighbors so they have, you know, food to cook? Or like, I think everyone should do farming. We have the, all this land.
Yeah.
So we'll be self-sufficient.
Yes, yes. And you know what? Kate, the secretary of the Department of Agriculture, just came out with a press release on that. So if the president came up with a build project, this secretary of agriculture just came up with a campaign called plant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, that's true.
Yeah, teaching people to plant, do backyard gardening so that it will help. So you know how we Filipinos love rice and how we cannot live without rice? So people will say, as long as I have rice. So they have a sack of rice. Now do backyard gardening. Have some salt, soy sauce.
Soy sauce and oil.
Oil and you're good. Good to go. Yeah. Campaign now.
Yeah. Well, that's very good. I hope everyone will be, you know, if they have a chance to plant and be sustainable instead of relying just going to buy, I think it's time to, you know, start farming.
Exactly. You know, we're doing that in the ports, in our ships. We're really putting plants, you know, just getting the awareness done. And I tell our people, I say, come on, let's just inspire people. When they ride our boats or they see our ports, they see all this vertical gardening that we're doing, the vertical gardening using containers, you know, those old pet bottles of the soft drinks. We plant vegetables. And I was happy to know for the janitorial, the cleaning business, my managing director sent me pictures of them, of their families, of where people are in lockdown, and how they are saying that the plants that they planted at the ports and their backyard is now helping them. Wow. You know, provide them, you know, vegetables that can help them on a day-to-day basis. I said, wow, that's neat. That's cool. Let's continue doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we can cook pichai. Pichai is not hard to, right? And those are good. Yeah. You sauteed it with onions and garlic. Yeah. Those are very good. Mary Ann, what have been the most influential experiences in your life?
Okay, looking back, I would say being a part of Entrepreneurs Organization really helped us a lot. Like my kids grew up knowing people and the brand, because that's how I associate them. She's an EO, or this makeup brand is an EO company, or this right now, Angkas, you know, the like Grab for motorcycles. Mm-hmm, she's mm-hmm. a new EO member. And they will be part of the experiences of EO. And growing up, they would say, oh, it's an aspiration. We want to be EO members. We want to be EO members, because they see how good, how great it is. So it really added to our family life, you know, to the experience, the richness of our lives. Influence us in many ways, like continuous education for us, and you know, the network that we work around with, that was really good. So I'd say that's a big help. Another influence would be Interferry Organization. It's an organization of ferry owners of the world, suppliers of ferry businesses. And I remember when we were invited to join in we started when Chet was invited to speak in New York in the Interferry Conference that was 2010. And then we became members soon after. And I was thinking, you know, attending the conferences, like, wow, they're really big ship owners. You know, their ships are not like our ships, which are like, if we're talking about our ships are like 700 gross tonnage, 300 people capacity boats. We're talking about your ship's thousands, like 30,000 gross tonnage of those ships. And I would feel small, right? But I would say, what are we doing here? They're like big and we're small. And over time, what I realized is that I learned a lot from them. I'm like a little child when I'm around them. I pick their brains, you know, like I just sit down beside them and I go, how did you start the ferry business? What were your problems? And it's just like, I'm like a little child absorbing all their stories and learning. And now that I'm in this position, I am able to share that with our people and the young ones and my kids and all in the hope that we will have a better industry and, you know, for the long term. So I think, I remember one prayer time and I said, what are we even doing here? It's so expensive to be in this, circle, you know, because you have to have juice and you have to travel. Of course, you pay for your own travel and all, but now I get it. You know, as I age, as we grow the business, I get it. There are valuable lessons that can be learned that you will not get unless you're there. Mm-hmm. You will not get unless you interact with people you do the same things with. It's pretty much the same with EO. And that really helped us a lot. That's another part of my family now. We look forward to our annual inter-ferry conferences. And you know what? We had the pleasure of hosting all these members here in the Philippines in 2016. 350 ferry owners came to the Philippines and just, you know, shared. I always say, why are we even doing this? Anyway, I get it now. I get it now. We shared with them our culture, the Philippines, and they're like our big brothers in the industry. And the amount of learning that I get is just a lot. The support that we get is a lot, and I value that. Another would be being a part of a bigger community outside our family. It's my church. So we got involved in our parish. I live beside a church, Kate, here in Alabang. And Chad and I actually prayed for it. We said we prayed for a house beside a church. And when we had the opportunity, it's like next door to the church. And I remember sighing a prayer and saying, God, it's too close. And, you know, you can imagine God probably wanting to smack me right there. It's like, you pray for a house near the church, right? I give you a house very near the church. But anyway, my point is I tell the kids because some would comment like, are you sure you want to be near the church? Like high risk because it's noisy, high risk because people come and go and, you know, the risk of burglary and whatever, the noise of people coming and going. And I would say, you know what? I prayed for this. And if I got it, I don't have any complaints. And the reason why we prayed for a house near the church is just because it's a way for us to be close. It's a way for us to, you know, the peace of mind knowing that you can run to the church when you have problems, you have issues, you made a mistake, you can go run and pray. It's just us. It's just our wiring and it helps. So being involved in church, being able to pray, being able to be active, you know, sensing that we are part of a bigger community, like I'm friends with my neighbors. I serve as a lector, you know, I read the word, and I've been reading for the past 26 years. So I serve in the 7:30 p.m. Mass and the 6:20 a.m. Mass on Saturdays, every other Saturday. So it's like part of the rhythm of my life, such that when I travel, I make sure that I find a substitute, you know, to take care of my slot. It influenced me a lot in the sense that I come running to them when I have spiritual issues, when I need direction, as I mentioned earlier. So I surround my friends with good people who can help me in my life. More of lift up, you know, more of the lifting up, more of the positive side than the negative side. So I think that really influenced me a lot. And I think we're passing it on to our kids in the sense that on Sunday evenings, so after I serve the 7:30 Mass, so we have this ritual where we pray before and after Mass, those who serve that Mass. So when we say goodbye to our priest, when I bless in Philippines, diba, mano, we go, mano, I say, oh, bye, Father. Oh, Father, you want to have dinner in the house? And so it has become a norm when we would have priests over for Sunday dinners with our kids. And now I see that with my two girls now, they're also close to priest friends. And I think it worked out well for us. So it's not only me, my husband is also close, you know. We're influenced by them, by their teaching, by when we have questions, when we have doubts in the faith. So yeah, so that would be my influence.
Wonderful. So what advice would you give to an aspiring Filipina entrepreneurs?
Okay. Filipinas. We have so much to give and share. I think for young Filipinas, like my mom, there will always be challenges. There will always be difficulties. But what is important is for us to forge on, you know, go ahead, go jump in, work, give your best, and then learn, continuously learn, read, network, pretty much what we're doing, in EO, network, and then pray, of course, pray. It comes in many, many forms. So, you know Warren Ruston, right, Kate?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So she was here. Yes, he was here like 2 years ago, 3 years ago to talk to us, EO Manila. And he shared that set yourself for success every day. How to set yourself for success every day. So he said three things. Set aside 30 minutes every day, 10 minutes for purpose. So every day you think about, what's my purpose today? What's my purpose today? So think about that, 10 minutes. And then another 10 minutes on meditation or positivity. So that may be reading or meditation or prayer, 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes of journalizing. You said 10 minutes of journalizing. So you write it down every day so that you get your thoughts on paper and you're able to process. And, you know, it's like a gratitude journal in a way. And you know what? Since he said that, I have been doing it. And if I can go back in time, I would probably do it when I was so much younger. I think it helps a lot with the introspection and, you know, grounding yourself and putting your thoughts together. And could have eliminated all the dramas I had.
Well, that's wonderful. That's a very good advice. Yeah, you know, he's doing live series in his Facebook page. And, I'm actually going to listen later because he just comes down when I'm freaking out. So yeah, if you go to his page, he has different content. I think he's doing purpose, values, or clarity. And so yeah, if you get a chance, but that's a very good advice. The 30 minute, 10 days of meditation, 10 days of journaling. And what's the first one? 10 day of purpose.
10 minutes. What's your purpose? And then 10 minutes of positivity and then 10 minutes of journalizing, writing it. Yeah. Wow. And I have like 4 books and it has become my diary. You see, when you start, it's like, just writing down what you did for the day. But then over time, when you develop the skill, it's more of the deeper, what's inside, what's going on in your head. And what he was saying is that, it's for legacy. Who knows? Maybe I will have a grandchild later on who's going to be a writer.
Write in your journal.
Yes, and maybe tell stories out of my journal. Yeah. So he actually said that it's for legacy. It's for processing. It's for, you know, going back later on. Yeah. And I'm a big believer of the vision board. Vision board. Yeah. Because Kate, in our forum, in my spousal forum, we had a, we call it the SME, the subject matter expert. We invited this lady to talk about the vision board to us. Mm-hmm. And I have done it and I have actually realized a lot of the things that I put in my vision board. One of which is meeting Oprah.
Wow. Okay. Maybe yeah. She'll be listening.
Meeting Oprah. I put it in my vision board and it happened. Yeah.
Wow. So, how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered as someone who have loved much, who have laughed hard, and who have made a difference. You know, my prayer, every day is that, when I encounter people, I pray that they see God in me. As I always say, our lives is God's gift to us. What we do with our life is, God's gift to us. Our gift to God, sorry. What we do with our life is our gift to God. And I pray that my life was worth something. I was telling my son, you know, when we go to heaven, God will not ask, oh, how many cars did you have? How many cars or houses or clothes? Did you wear good clothes or did you party much? But maybe what he will ask is, have you loved much? You love much. Who did you love? So I pray that, you know, that, my life will be that. I will be remembered as someone who has loved. Love God and love.
Wow, I love it. Well, Mary Ann, thank you so much. I wish that I could talk to you forever. We need to do Zoom call, just us chatting. I love how you're so positive and you're running all your, you know, your energy is just, it's, you're just, you just have the, all this positive energy and you seem so calm in the midst of pandemic. So I love that. I need the energy today because today was a rough day for me. So thank you for sharing. And that was really wonderful. And, where can they find you? Do you have a website? I know you have fastcat.com. Do you have your personal page?
No.
Instagram? Okay. No worries.
But yeah, Fastcat would be the page.
Yeah. Well, is that part of your vision board in 2030? You wanted a 60 boat. Is that in your vision board?
Okay. Yes. Because you know, Kate, how many islands we have in the Philippines, and when we meet people, they go, you know, we would have a lot of governors and congressmen calling us, coming to our office, mayors coming to our office saying, we want you to connect our island. And this is just one example. I had the mayor was there and he said, I want you to connect my island. I go, but mayor, it takes a year to build the Fastcat and you know, it's not cheap at all. So, we have old boats, that maybe we can put in your island. And he goes, no, I want Fastcat. They don't want the old boats. They want the model of a Fastcat. They want the brand new catamaran, mid-speed vessel, and you know, it's already implanted in their minds, the expectation and the brand itself. Uh-huh. So that's what they want. So 60 Fastcats by 2030 is our big, hairy, audacious goal. It's not enough to connect the Philippine Islands, but it's our dream to be able to connect the Philippines and be able to help business, trade, education in what we do. Yeah.
Well, you're making a big difference. And like I said, I grew up in riding one of your boats and just going from places to another and helping our economy. You're making a big difference to all the Filipinos. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Miranda. And I can't wait to see you in the Philippines in one of these days. Yes. And have a wonderful day.
You too.
Bye. Thank you, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And visit katehancock.com so you don't miss out on the next episode.